I'm Dr. Leif Tapanilla from the Idaho Museum of Natural History, and I'm here with Peter Pruitt from Zoo Idaho, and this is The Nature of Idaho. Coming to you from the 1B, Bannock County that is, we're talking all about Idaho, its wild places and wild faces, the natural setting that makes Idaho an incredible place to live and be proud of. Well, today our guest is Scott Marchant. He's written 5 guidebooks on hiking in Idaho. It's one of the best ways to see our beautiful state. So get your day pack ready. Peter, pack lots of water, no flip-flops.
This is not a weekend hour hike. It is, we're getting into Idaho and seeing, as you said, some of that amazing land that we have here.
Well, we're really blessed with lots of it in this state. And if you have been, for a variety of reasons, stuck at home, not being able to socialize with people, you're in luck if you live in Idaho, because there's so many ways you can get out and enjoy nature and recalibrate your soul.
I like that, right? Recalibrate.
Yeah, that's right. Before we get into hiking and talking with our guest, Scott, you know, it's time for some nature news.
You bet. You know, mantis shrimps are the Mike Tysons of the crustacean world.
A mantis shrimp. These are little sea creatures.
These are little sea creatures that pack a punch.
That's right.
Their punch is so fast, it can out-accelerate a .22 caliber bullet and deliver over 1,500 newtons of force.
That's a lot.
That's a lot, but that's not even the coolest part of a mantis shrimp.
Tell us the cool part.
It's their eyes. It's their compound eyes.
Okay.
They have 16 color receptors, which is 13 more than what we humans have.
Okay.
They can see from the ultraviolet up through the infrared spectrum.
Wow.
And they can see polarized light, which is really cool. So, I mean, real quick physics lesson, I had to refresh myself. So light waves vibrate all over the place.
Right.
And then if it's polarized, it kind of vibrates in certain directions. And I think the best example I saw is like when you're strumming a guitar. Depending on what directions or how you strum, you vibrate that string a certain direction.
Right.
The cool part is there are 6 types of polarizations with light. And when light passes through water molecules, it does get polarized. Mantis shrimps can see all 6 types of polarizations, which is horizontal, vertical, 2 diagonals, and 2 types of circular polarization, clockwise and counterclockwise.
Crazy.
Only critters that can do that.
That's amazing.
And here's the other cool part. Researchers have found cancer cells reflect the odd growing, fast-growing cells reflect polarized light differently than healthy cells. So researchers are working on developing cameras that are similar to mantis shrimp eyes to detect cancer. They feel that they can detect cancer earlier, and then they can actually find it more accurately than other types of processes.
You took me on a left turn there, because we were talking about sea creatures that have amazing punching forces. You took a left turn to talk about their amazing eyes and how they polarize light, which really focuses the light in a way. And then you took another left turn and you got to relating that to cancer diagnostics.
Yes.
Well, that was pretty good.
Yeah. The animal world, the natural world is insanely cool.
Well, and we can learn so much from them,
yes,
right? By studying their systems and how they work and then relating it to something applied in our world.
Yes.
Peter, that was awesome. Very nice. That's our nature news. But you know what? It's trivia time, as we always like to do on this show. Our theme today, of course, is hiking. And one of the great places to hike in Idaho are in our national forests. So our trivia question today has to do with national forests in Idaho. What is the largest national forest in Idaho? I think you're going to be surprised by how big it really is. We'll get to the answer to that, and we'll be talking about hiking right after the break.
This is KISU-FM Pocatello, Idaho Falls, Rexburg. Also available on your Amazon or Google smart speaker with the command Play KISU.
I want to welcome Scott Marchant. He's an avid hiker. He's recently published a guidebook update to the greater Boise area. as well as having many other hiking books out on the market. First off, Scott, thank you for joining us today on The Nature of Idaho.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Well, now, Scott, are you a lifelong Idahoan that has been hiking these hills all your days?
No, actually, I've been in Idaho since about 2000, so maybe 20 years, but I grew up in Florida, of all places, and I think I went to college in Reno, and once I saw mountains, I fell in love with them.
You had to come back.
I had to come back.
Well, you had to find a place with even more mountains.
Yes.
Yeah.
Indeed. So
with less people, which is Idaho.
Yes, absolutely. So, compare and contrast Florida and Idaho in terms of hiking.
there's no comparison. There's no.
Was that a rhetorical question?
I've hiked a couple of trails in Florida, and it's very humid and very flat.
Well, on the plus side, Florida, I must say, they have beautiful ocean real estate that Idaho does not have. But what we do have in spades is lots of great outdoors and mountains and all sorts of geography to enjoy. And so we're thankful that you write about it. How did you start writing about hiking?
It was 2007. I lived in Stanley, Idaho for a couple of years. Made it through one winter, but not the second. But while I was there, I decided to write a guidebook, really more out of just for fun. And I ended up writing a guidebook and ended up getting a divorce. And I thought I either have to go back to working my 8-to-5 job, or I'm going to have to see if I can make a living doing this. That's kind of how it all started. And then from there, I just kept looking at geographical areas and said, hey, I'm going to go over here and write a guidebook, and then I'm going to write a guidebook for this area. I eventually made a little business out of it.
We'll even go a little bit further back. You did talk about Reno. What really inspired you to get out and hike? I mean, you have to be a pretty intense hiker to start writing guidebooks. So what led you into thoroughly enjoying hiking?
Well, I remember the first hike I ever did. I was in Arizona, of all places, and I was in my mid-20s, and I remember I didn't know anything about hiking, really, and I just saw a hill, and I said, you know, that looks interesting, and I said, I was with my girlfriend at the time. I said, we should just hike up that hill and see what's up there. I didn't even realize there were hiking trails, and we went up about halfway up this side of this fairly large hill, and there were cactuses everywhere. But it was a really kind of neat experience, other than the cactuses. And there was just something I was drawn to from that day on. And then I started hiking. I lived in California for a couple of years, and I started hiking in the Sierras and just fell in love with the solitude of being in the woods. That's really, and then it just grew from there. And I started hiking in Colorado, and I lived in Colorado for a few years, and just fell in love with being in nature.
You know, I think it's great that you said the solitude of the woods. When you actually are hiking and you stop and listen, you're really not alone. There's a lot of things going on around you as you're hiking.
Yes, and you have to pay attention. I mean, it's interesting. One of the things people go, you know, ask me who I hike with or if I hike alone when I do the guidebooks. I actually prefer to hike alone because the experience is much more intense than if you're with other individuals because you are much more acutely aware of everything that's going around you. So it's a very different experience than if you're with two or three other people. Although hiking with two or three other people is still good, but it is a different experience if you're by yourself.
When you started your preferred routes and hiking trails, did it start off as just writing this for an intended audience that might follow the same footpaths that you did? Or were you trying to find things in that setting to describe independent of the trail itself? What were you looking for when you were writing?
Well, I several things. One, I was trying to give people to give them the facts, like how do I get to this particular trailhead? How long is the trail? How much elevation gain am I going to do? You know, how difficult is it? Is there any route finding? But then the other thing was inspiration. I was trying to give people the inspiration to get out. So when I write about a hike, I look for each hike has its own beauty. And so I think as a writer that, you know, you could factually just give all the facts for every hike and it becomes somewhat mundane, or you can take each hike and say, okay, here's the facts, but also here's the beauty of this hike from a nature standpoint. This is what makes this particular trail different from this trail that's 10 miles away. because there is a difference, but you really have to pay attention. And I mean, other than the obvious that certain trees are maybe larger or smaller, or the trail's wider, but there really is almost something you have to really be paying attention to, and you want to convey that to the reader.
So in a sense, when you're writing, you're trying to reach kind of like the broadest group of potential hikers, because there are hikers who they look for a specific type of challenge. And then there's other hikers who are really looking, like you said, at the environment and some type of landmark or geological feature. And you're reaching out to the broadest group of hikers possible?
Yeah, I would say that's a good description. I mean, I am trying to, yes, because you do get people who don't hike very much at all. And so they're intimidated by the woods or being out in nature, you know, that something might get them or whatnot. So you're trying to give them the knowledge so that they feel more secure in going out hiking. And then you're right, there are people on the other side of the, you know, they wouldn't even want to go on a trail. There are people that just want to go off trail and, you know, just create their own path through the woods.
So how would you encourage someone if they are intimidated to go out on a trail? You know, not everyone can sit there and go, oh, look, there's this hill in Arizona, let's hike it.
So I think, well, I mean, one is you want to make sure you carry the 10 essentials with you. I mean, you want to have a flashlight and you want to have some kind of, you know, matches or something, a lighter that if you needed heat, you want to bring adequate clothing. Weather can change dramatically when you're out in the woods, especially up at the higher elevations. So I think part of it is just getting comfortable with that you have the right items in your pack if something were to happen. You know, it's amazing to me. I've had many people come up to me. There's a farmer's market here in Boise every Saturday, although it's not this year because of COVID. But a lot of people come up and say, I got lost on the trail from your book. And I'm like, how did you get lost? And they said, well, I left the book in the car thinking I knew everything. And then I would get to an unsigned junction and I took the wrong turn. So part of it is just, you know, not being overconfident too, I think. And I've done that myself where I think I know everything I need to know about a particular trail or something, and I can get myself in a situation where, you know, maybe it's not so safe or it can be dangerous.
Tell us about the guidebooks that you've written in the different regions that you've covered so far in Idaho.
There's a sawtooth guidebook. It's called the Idaho Sawtooth Country, and it's basically about a 30-mile radius around Stanley, which is three mountain ranges. You have your Sawtooth Mountains, which are the most well-known. Then you have the White Cloud Mountains to the east of the Sawtooth, and to the north is the Salmon River Mountains, which is one of the largest mountain ranges in Idaho. So there's hikes in all three of those mountain ranges. Then there's a book for the Sun Valley Ketchum area, which is the Boulder, Smoky, and Pioneer Mountains. And then I have two for Boise and one for the McCall area, which basically extends from Riggins all the way down to Cascade. So it's a fairly large geographical area.
What was the most enjoyable book to write?
I couldn't really. It's like I have multiple children, and it's like somebody saying, what's your favorite child? I really can't tell you that, because each book, what's interesting is I did a book about 2 years ago called The Best Easy Hikes, Greater Boise. I had a lot of people saying, hey, I want to get out in the woods, but I don't want to go over a 10,000-foot pass. I just want to go 2 miles and it needs to be fairly easy. So I wrote this book, The Best Easy Hikes, and I thought, this isn't going to be fun to put together after doing, you know, the Sawtooth and the Payette National Forest and the Sun Valley area and these great mountain ranges. And it actually was very interesting putting that book together, because I discovered that, you know, you don't have to go up a 10,000-foot peak to really enjoy the woods. You can just go 2 miles down a trail. So a lot of times I was looking for a destination for people, because in 2 miles you can't normally get to a high mountain lake, and plus the book needed to be an easier type hike. But it was way more interesting putting that book together than I thought it was going to be.
I like that answer, because I think what you said about you don't have to go many, many miles in order to see something great is very true. I think context is everything. And maybe, you know, if you spend only 2 miles in hiking, you might see things in more detail than if you were more focused on covering a greater distance, right? And so your ability to absorb might actually be higher and richer in quality if you only spent your time traveling over a shorter distance. There's lots to take in almost in any setting, and it doesn't necessarily have to be at the highest elevation to do that.
Yeah, that's a good point, because a lot of times, you know, mountain biking has become such a huge sport and outdoor recreation. And of course, mountain bikers are going much faster than a hiker. And I often think about that there, a lot of times you can't see things if you're going too fast. You may not see an animal that's on the edge of the meadow or it's on the fringe, because if you're going faster, you just can't absorb and take in everything that you're going to see on the trail. I mean, I've seen people that hike there's a big loop that goes through the Sawtooth that's about 18 miles. And many people will do it in a day, and it takes a full day if you do it in a day and don't camp overnight. And there's just no way you can see all these small lakes that are, you know, a quarter mile off the main trail, or some of the drainages, you can't explore them. There isn't enough time. And so they're not really seeing the same thing that somebody that's going at a much slower pace is seeing.
As you're kind of making these additions and continuing to hike, have you seen a difference in the trends in hiking over the last decade or so since you've really started these projects?
When you say trend, I mean, I think the biggest thing that I notice is technology and its impact, whether it's cell phones or different apps that people have access to. That's probably the biggest change that I've seen, which is good. I mean, there's a lot of information out there, but it's like anything on the internet. There's a lot of bad information out there. So you have to kind of judge it for what it is.
Kind of a continuation on that. As you're hiking, we've got four seasons in Idaho. When people are hiking, of course they're going to see different things as they're hiking. But, you know, I also lived in Minnesota, and there was all kinds of snowshoeing. That's kind of winter hiking. Do you have four seasons of available hiking in Idaho?
Well, you do in the Treasure Valley, because snow doesn't stay here very long, or in the desert areas in southern Idaho. So you actually do, but it is very limited. I mean, there's obviously you can snowshoe in a lot of the areas. The main thing is getting access to the trailhead, because a lot of the dirt roads aren't plowed in the winter. So, but yeah, in the Treasure Valley area, there's quite a bit of places you can hike in the winter without snow. But, it, you know, every year is different. I mean, we've had years where there is a lot of snow, and then it never really warms up over 30, and it never melts. So, but that's not a typical year. But most of the state, I would say, is not available for winter hiking of Idaho, other than snowshoeing.
I imagine finding your trails and staying on trail becomes a bit more of a challenge when everything's covered over.
Yes, it is. It is. I've gone and snowshoed trails that I know pretty intimately, and I can get a mile or two out in the Booners, and all of a sudden nothing looks familiar. So it looks completely different when everything's covered in snow. It's a lot easier to get lost, because there's, particularly if you're going somewhere that not a lot of people go, there may not be any tracks. Yeah, you have to really be careful what you're doing when it comes to snowshoeing, if you get off the beaten path.
So over the course of almost a couple decades of doing these hiking guides, have you noticed a difference in the number of people and the impact to trail systems over time, whether it's, you know, for the positive or for the negative?
As you know, the state of Idaho is just, particularly Treasure Valley, is one of the fastest growing places in the country right now. And the impact, I mean, I can go back to trails that I haven't seen. And many trails, depending where they are, I may not go back for 5 years or 6 years to update the book. So I may not have hiked it in those 5 or 6 years. And I'll go back to the trail, and it's much wider. There's one impact you can see when a lot more people are using it. And cairns, which are rocks stacked on top of rocks to identify maybe a high point or an unsigned junction, there's a lot more. You can tell that humans have been at work out in the woods more. Trailheads are way more crowded than they used to be, particularly the Sawtooth area. Any of the areas that are more well-known outside of the state of Idaho are getting a lot more impact from visitors. You can see a big change. I know that somebody was up hiking out of the Iron Creek Trailhead about 3 weeks ago. And typically, on a weekend in the summer, you might have 20 or 25 cars at that trailhead. And they said there were over 100 cars at the trailhead.
Wow.
And that's a lot of cars. That's a lot of people.
So it's an interesting challenge. As population grows, there's on one hand, I think we want to encourage people to get out there and go hiking, enjoy nature. But at the very same time, that increase in foot traffic brings with it the chances of, I don't know, diminishing the experience at the least, right? By having lots of people and you're looking for solitude perhaps, and it's hard to find solitude when there's 100 cars of people. Right. And so there's a balance, I suppose, in desiring more people to experience this, but then also not diminishing the thing that we're trying to seek. Do you see ways of, you know, going forward of how people can reduce their impact so that we can maintain the quality of trails that we have, that we enjoy, you know, that we can maximize the number of people that can enjoy it, but minimize the effects that are negative?
Yeah, and I, and some of the biggest impacts that I see, particularly on trails that get a lot of use, is trash. It's amazing to me how many people will take toilet paper and just, I know it degrades, but they'll just leave it on the side of the trail, which is, if it was one person, maybe that'd be okay. But if you get 50 people doing that,
right,
all of a sudden it loses its beauty of being on a trail. And it's so easy to pick up your trash. Cutting switchbacks are a big thing. And I notice that seems to be a lot of younger people who will cut switchbacks to save a few footsteps. You know, and of course, a switchback is, you know, when a trail double backs on itself, and it's usually used when you're going up a steep hillside. And a lot of people cut switchbacks, and the Forest Service comes in and has to put rocks or broken, you know, down trees to try and keep people to stop doing that. So it's not only visually impactful, but it's also, it can destroy the trail because it can start little creek drainages start up, and it's also more work for the Forest Service. So those are some of the things people can do, each individual can do, to help keep the trails more intact. And then the other thing is just respect for others. You know, and sometimes you'll go to a trailhead and somebody will have their music cranked up in their car so loud that you can hear it for a mile. And it's just, you're out in the woods so that you don't have to hear that or see that.
I'll be honest, that is one of my pet peeves out hiking. I don't know, it's a free country, but when folks are carrying a music device and they're not on headphones, but they're just kind of blaring it as they go hiking through the woods, and it's like, oh, I don't want to hear this. Put on the headphones.
Right. And neither do the deer or the elk.
probably the case.
Yeah, and then one of the other things you had talked about was the impact of the population growth in Idaho and the amount of people that are hiking. One of the things I try and do every time I publish a guidebook is have 15 or 20 trails that really haven't been exposed. Because I think if you can spread people out,
right,
then that helps, rather than everybody using the same six or seven trails that are close to your home. That if you can just disperse people, and they need that knowledge to know that, hey, there's another trail that's 6 miles away, and this is where it goes.
With your guidebooks, too, what I also like is that you talk about what they can see along those trails. And so they might go, hey, this is 6 miles away, and I'm going to get a very similar experience, not only on difficulty, but what I get to see and hear, or, oh my gosh, this one's 10 miles away and it's going to be a totally different experience. So you're giving everyone opportunities and different types of rewards.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things, there's, after I have all the facts for a hike, I have about three paragraphs, which I call the romance of the hike. And really what I'm trying to do for people is paint a picture of what you're going, you know, obviously everybody's experience is going to be different and the weather makes a big impact, but here's what you should experience on this trail or see on this trail. And some people may not, and I try and tell the negatives too, because, you know, it may be super steep and some people aren't in shape to go do something that's not going to be good for them, so that they can read about the hike and go, yeah, this is something that speaks to me, or no, this doesn't speak to me, and I don't want to go there, to save people time, because we all like different things. I mean, most people like being in nature, but then we all go to nature for different reasons, I think.
I've got to ask you one last question. So we record this out of KISU at Idaho State University in Pocatello. What's your favorite place to hike in Southeast Idaho? It's a trick question.
I don't know that part of Idaho very well. I will say the City of Rock.
Okay.
Which isn't really in Pocatello, but.
We're going to have you out here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll give you a tour. Well, it's an enormous state. And, you know, coming back to what you were just saying of trying to encourage people to spread out and find the beauty in this state, you know, it's such a big state. It's really, really, really big. And so the potential to accommodate a large and growing population is very real here. We can do it. So when people get out there, and we really strongly encourage people to get out there and enjoy nature and be a part of it, you know, there are some real basic things that we can each and every one of us do to do our little part to make sure that we keep it, you know, as nice or a little better than we saw it when we got there. If there's a little piece of trash, pick it up, take it out. Real simple things like that. Just so that we can preserve this beautiful place that we all so much enjoy for as long as possible.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, coming back to, you know, the enormity of this place, let's come back to our trivia question. I started off by asking, you know, what is the largest national forest here in Idaho? Can you help us with that, Scott?
I think that's the 4.2 million acre Salmon Chalice National Forest.
Yeah, 4.2 million acres. That's quite a lot of real estate.
That's a lot of real estate.
There's a lot of places to explore.
That's a very pretty part of the world.
Quite a few guidebooks needed to be written about that. All right. We want to thank Scott Marchant for joining us today. For more information.
Well, thank you for having me.
Oh, absolutely. It's been a pleasure. And for more information on his guidebooks and Hiking Idaho, please visit hikingidaho.com.
The Nature of Idaho is produced at KISU-FM Studios at Idaho State University in Pocatello. Technical assistance and production by Jamin Anderson and Caitlin Hart. Music is by Idaho's very own Sons of Bannock. Audio of this and all past episodes of The Nature of Idaho can be found at KISU.org. Find The Nature of Idaho weekly podcast on iTunes or Google Play Music. For more information, click on the Idaho logo at KISU.org or send email to NOIDKISU@ISU.edu.